deal with a lot of conspiracy type theories on the program over the years, and involving the rich and the powerful, people who pull the strings behind the scenes. I'm not sure, maybe you, this is the first question, I'm not sure we can call this a conspiracy, what's happened on Wall Street, or not. I mean, is it a conspiracy if everyone is aware of it and in on it? I mean, Democrats and Republicans, all the presidents back to Reagan, all the Congresses back to that period, regulators and the regulated, the media, academia, everyone seemingly happy to rake in the cash and pretend, you know, the good times could last forever when they know it's not true. It is what happened to our economy, the result of a conspiracy in the classic definition of the word.
Not in the classic definition of the word, not so much for the reasons that you were explaining that everybody knew, but because it really emanates from the C-suites, the CEOs and the CFOs, and they don't need to conspire in a classic fashion. If you have 3,000 employees, you're countrywide or something like that, you can't send a memo to 3,000 people saying, we want you to engage in accounting fraud. But you can send the same message through your compensation system. And so it's quite deliberate. They produce precisely the results they expect to get, and they adjust their compensation mechanisms if they're not getting enough fraud. But it's not classic.
Help me understand your role in the SNL scandal. And when I say scandal, I mean it almost seems quaint when you look back at those halcyon days when it was relatively small compared to sort of the brazenness, the scope of the wholesale plunder that is a more recent vintage.
That's correct. When it was happening, of course, it was widely described as the worst financial scandal in U.S. history. It is produced losses roughly 1/70th the size of the current crisis, and that's just counting losses to households. And, of course, there are broader losses in this crisis. So the household losses estimated in this crisis at $11 trillion. A trillion is $1,000 billion. The savings and loan crisis was contained at a cost of $150 billion. And our role that is of probably particular interest to your listeners in terms of evaluating the current crisis is a couple of things. First, the key deregulation that kicked off the savings and loan crisis, or at least the second phase of it, which was the fraud phase, occurred with the Garn-St. Germain Act of 1982. And by late 1983, the agency was already aggressively re-regulating the industry. In the current crisis, of course, the key deregulation was a combination of regulatory steps and statutory steps taken largely in the 80s and early 90s. I'm sorry, the 90s and the early millennium decade. And the regulators never responded to the crisis until the disaster had already fully struck and financial markets worldwide had often shut down. So that's one major difference. And that re-regulation of the industry took place against the will of everybody. In other words, it wasn't just President Reagan, although his administration hated the idea of re-regulation. A majority of the members of the House of Representatives passed a resolution calling on us not to re-regulate the industry. Most, and that included most of the prominent Democrats. The Speaker of the House, a Democrat, tried to coerce us not to re-regulate the industry. Four of the five senators who became known as the Keating Five were Democrats and such, and the trade association was considered the third most powerful trade association in America. So it was really bipartisan. It was incredibly widespread, the opposition. And you didn't see anything like that. There was no significant act of re-regulation until everything was, you know, the horses were out of the barn and the barn had burned down in the current crisis.
You put people in jail, though. I mean, a lot of people.
Yeah, that's the second thing. Collectively, we convicted over 1,000 elites of fraud in cases designated as major cases. In other words, that's not the small ones. When you count the small ones, it was several thousand. In the current crisis, there are exactly 10 folks who would meet that definition of senior insiders, and absolutely none of them are from Wall Street. The 10 are all from a single case, which is an obscure mortgage bank located in Florida that even specialists had never heard of most of the time, called Taylor Bean. So to produce all those successful criminal prosecutions, it all has to start with the criminal referrals from the regulators. There are no an analog of police on the beat in white-collar world. In other words, think of in the Enron crisis, if someone had called up the Houston Police Department and said, you know, I think there's a problem at Enron, whether it's accounting, you should look into it. they would have hung up the phone on you and considered you a nitnut because police don't do those types of things. So in the savings and loan crisis, our agency alone, the Office of Thrift Supervision, called OTS, made well over 10,000 criminal referrals. In the current crisis, the same agency, OTS, made zero criminal referrals.
And is that likely to change? I mean, as you know, the public gets angry and seems to want something done, and I'm not sure that that's an accurate description. We can talk about the Occupy movement in a little bit, but it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of push in Washington to clean this thing up.
Well, there is a great demand among the public, but you are quite right that neither party wants to clean it up at the governmental and political level. The people are enraged, but both parties have as their principal source of campaign finance the finance industry. And one of the stories in all of this is how disastrous the finance industry has become for the what's called the real economy. By some measures, the finance industry there are two studies. One says it represented 31% of total corporate profits, and the other says 40% of total corporate profits. In any event, there are fewer than 5% of all workers in America work in this industry, so you can see some idea of how incredibly disproportionate. So on its good days, it finance operates like a parasite that dramatically weakens the real economy. But most of the time, it's far worse than that. Most of the time, it's busy exporting U.S. jobs to other countries, and it's busy destroying wealth. Indeed, there's no more prodigious destroyer of wealth and jobs than the U.S. finance industry, hence that $11 trillion loss that I talked about earlier. So you're right, the second function was shutting down the frauds and then suing them and prosecuting them criminally, neither of which has happened very much at all. In fact, in the current system, most of the agencies eliminated the whole function of making criminal referrals. And if you do that, you guarantee that the elites will be able to defraud with impunity. So we have to restore that, and you'll notice that it was the Bush administration that largely destroyed criminal referrals, the Obama administration has not made it in the least a priority to reestablish criminal referrals. And you would think that would be the absolute minimum that you would want to do. And you'll notice that the Republicans in the House, they control the House and are very aggressive in holding hearings to embarrass the administration, don't hold hearings on this to embarrass the administration for not prosecuting the fraudulent elite bankers. And again, both parties are very, very good friends of the fraudulent bankers.
Yeah, and there's the deal pending where the Attorney General Holder is looking to cut a deal with the financial services industry to say, okay, we'll make you pay some money, but we're not going to hold any of you liable criminally.
Yeah, and indeed, it's actually worse than that, as you would expect. So the deal that they're talking about is in the context of the massive foreclosure fraud. And what's been revealed is that our top entities making handling foreclosures were endemically fraudulent. So these things are called robo-signing, but that is misleading. That suggests that there's some computer there signing real signatures after some kind of real review. What in fact there was is affidavits, and these affidavits, essentially everything significant in the affidavit was knowingly a lie. And that means that there were the foreclosure mills were producing around 10,000 of these fraudulent affidavits a month. So over 100,000 felonies a year. And out of that, there have been zero federal prosecutions. And indeed, there appears to be no real federal even investigation.